and welcome to the Sleep Nanny Show. And today we're talking about the different opinions and thoughts and viewpoints that people have around the whole concept of sleep training. And it's good to have a look at these and just really to understand why people may think what they think, and also to get a few facts as well, and just to see that there is always an alternative and there is something really to suit everybody regardless of where you are on this sort of spectrum. So in one camp, on one side, you've got people who are maybe of the attachment parenting variety, or at least they are the people who maybe have ideas or thoughts around sleep training as somehow being something damaging. They're usually the parents who will follow baby-led style everything. And the idea of sleep training to them may be that it will somehow put babies into a state of distress, stress, cortisol levels rising and doing them long-term damage, or breaking the bond between the parent and the child, and, you know, that it's somehow a real bad negative thing. Of course, if you think that it's going to do those things, you're going to think like that, of course. But why should it do those things? That, to me, tells me that they are assuming that it's going to mean leaving the child to get desperately upset or into a state of fear or distress. Now, that, to me, must mean that these people who think that must think that all forms of sleep training carry those criteria. Those of you who know me and know the whole brand and the ethos of the Sleep Nanny will know that that's absolutely not true, not where we're coming from anyway, and that nothing we do at all involves any, you know, letting babies feel fear or distress. Quite the opposite, actually. But some people don't know enough or don't look into all of it, and that will just take one scaremongering viewpoint or article or thing they hear and think, oh no, that's going to damage my child psychologically forever. And it's not true. And you know, you could say that about lots of things, not just sleep training. You know, you could say that when you tell your child no, they can't have a packet of sweets and they have a tantrum and you know, throw a paddy on the floor, that they're going to be so stressed that you're going to scar them. Or, you know, or if you decide that you know people, some people personally have other ideas and ways, but some people might say they use the naughty step concept or some kind of timeout where they're letting their child know that the thing they did wasn't good. Interestingly, many of the parents who think sleep training is damaging will then do that with their child. Well, how is that any different? You're still leaving your child to process emotions without support. That's actually the same as the thing you think sleep training is about. So, you know, it's important, I think, really to gather all the information and have all the facts before judging others anyway. Let's just say, by all means, you can have your own opinion. And I don't judge either camp that I'm going to describe here. But I do think it's important not to judge others, because what works for them may be right for them. So you have that camp, and then on the other side you have the complete opposite camp of people who are huge advocates of sleep training and actually have a very cut and dry concept in their minds that, yeah, just let them cry for a bit, they'll be okay, and my child got to sleep that way, and it's all very, you know, matter of fact. Yeah, no problem, no bother. It's like, you know, these people over here would think that they're emotionally withdrawn from it all. I'm just trying to paint a picture of two extremes here. And this exists. This is real. This is what happens. And quite often the older generation, or also many parents in our generation now, will take upon that, you know, that theory of, oh, they're okay, it's no biggie, it's just a bit of crying, doesn't, you know, whatever. And then maybe they're really resilient to it. That's fine, that's them, and if that works for them, let's not judge them. I personally sit in a nice, comfortable middle position on this, where I believe that you can have the best of both worlds. You can have a great sleeper without it being a distressing, upsetting, traumatic process to get there. Sounds, you know, the ideal, really, doesn't it? I'm sure both these people would prefer that if they really understood and knew that that was possible. And I think one of my missions and part of my mission and my entire purpose with this entire brand is to bring that to the forefront and to give parents that alternative and to say, you know, you don't have to be over here or over here. There is a way. People think it's hopeless. They think there is no way. We have to pick. We either have to just give it up and accept this, or we have to go hard and fast and harsh, and it's quite grueling. Not true. There really is a middle position. Somebody actually just said to me a week or so ago, you know, where are the people in between? And I think she'd been, you know, reading this and hearing this and seeing that and speaking to them and gone, oh, where are the people in between? Well, we're here. And, you know, hopefully everyone who, you know, likes and follows us and supports the Sleep Nanny, we are. So let's spread the word and let's let people know and let's crush some of those fears and let people feel like, you know, empowered enough that there is another way. So let's look at why people think some of the things that they think. I think it really comes down to almost lack of education, you know, lack of information, or absorbing that information at least. You know, we live in an internet age where you can Google anything and you can find the opinion you're looking for. So if you want a pro opinion, you'll find it. If you want a nay opinion, you'll find it, because it's the internet. It's all out there. There are very little studies, very little conclusive evidence of the effects of various forms of sleep training. There have been some studies that have shown increased levels of stress. The stress hormone cortisol is not just a stress hormone; it's also an adrenaline. It's the wake up, you know, hormone as well. There's all sorts of different functions. So cortisol isn't all bad, but there have been studies to show increased levels of cortisol in children who have been put through what I would actually define as the more harsh forms of sleep training, or possibly the forms of sleep training not right for that child. And they don't know how, you know, how long term those effects could be. Somebody said to me recently, how many 35-year-olds have they studied to see how it actually impacted them long term? And the truth is, I don't think they have. I'm not sure how you could measure that. Maybe it's something that could be begun. I don't know. But the truth is that's very minor. And if you actually pick apart those studies and really read them, you'll see that the examples of the sleep training or any other kind of parenting and disciplining and whatever that is being talked about is not the kind of responsive, secure attachment style sleep training that we do here at the Sleep Nanny. So that's the truth of it, you know, the fears and the distress, those stress levels going up, they're going to come in if the child is feeling fear or distress, is feeling abandonment, is feeling alone, the kind of thing that happens in perhaps in orphanages where they learn that nobody comes if I cry, or perhaps if a parent just ignores a child's cries for prolonged periods of time on a regular basis. And I mean the real true form of cry it out, which is extinction. That means you say goodnight, you walk away, you don't go back till morning. Or, you know, very extended controlled crying with really long stretches without responding. That could cause stress levels to rise. Of course, that could have stressful effects. That's not what all sleep training looks like. The parents over this side might not be fazed by that, or they may just have been in a situation where they did probably some form of controlled crying. Usually, that it's very rare that they're actually parents who have just left their child to cry indefinitely, but usually they're parents who have done a bit of controlled crying. It happened to be the right approach for that child. It didn't take very long and it just worked for them. That's okay. I'm sure that's not damaging, and we shouldn't judge those parents as in any way being cruel parents. You know, they've They've done what felt right for them and they've had no problem with that. But some people do have a problem with that, and it could be the parent's problem, or it could be the parent's fine with it, but it's just not right for that child, and it just is not the right combination. It's not right for that child. Even very gentle controlled crying with very regular responses, or staying just nearby, and there's so many different variations on controlled crying, so there are a number of different ways it can be done. But let's just say a very, very gentle form of controlled crying, it may not be the right thing for a child, if depending on what the situation has been, depending on what they have been doing, depending on their personality, their temperament traits, it might be that that's just not right for that child. No matter how gently you do it, it will cause them some distress. And in that situation, I would not use that approach. In another situation, it may be the absolute right approach for that child. It may be that this is a child who's, generally being quite self-sufficient and okay on their own and not really dependent upon much from the parent in order to get to sleep. Maybe they just need a little bit of help going through a stage. Maybe the parent being there too much and fussing too much actually keeps them awake longer and gives them more stimulation, and actually they need a little bit of space. And there are situations where that is true and it's perfectly safe and effective. It doesn't cause them any stress or harm. Sometimes it causes them a bit of irritation and they're a bit, not overly happy about it. But not being happy about something and being genuinely scared or distressed are two different things. When you say no to a packet of sweets, your child is annoyed, not stressed. there's a difference between allowing your baby or child to feel abandoned and letting them have some personal space. There really are two, you need to support them emotionally. Children need emotional support. The prefrontal cortex is not developed enough in childhood for them to be able to manage those emotions. They work from the limbic brain a lot, and it's something they need your help with in those early years, for sure. So you need to support their emotions, but you also need to distinguish those emotions and work out which are which. And let's stay level-headed on that, because I don't know, I think as parents, we all want to get it right, but sometimes we get very much, on our soapboxes about what we think is right, and we want to tell the world that. And actually, these guys might have it right for them, and these guys might have it right for them, and the rest of us might be okay here. I don't really see any as being right or wrong unless it really is the wrong combination. And you know what? The wrong combination over here can be damaging, and the wrong combination over here can be damaging. So, you can't, these two often like to argue their case. It's not necessarily true. If you're an attachment parent who believes that any form of training your child to do anything is going to be harmful, and you haven't perhaps explored the gentler ways, or maybe you have explored the gentler ways, but even those to you are too, too much. You just want to do, baby wearing, co-sleeping, and that's just what you want to do. If that's what you want to do and it works for you and it works for your baby, fine. There's really nothing wrong with that at all. If it's not working though, if you're so determined to do it that way, but actually your baby doesn't want that, your baby is not getting the sleep they need or not getting the feeds they need, or they are actually suffering the consequence of the fact that you're so determined to do it that way, then maybe it's not the right thing. And you may have when that's the case, another child comes along and you go, hang on, I can't do that anymore because there's another one. Or another one, and how can I? I can't be in two places at once. And suddenly you have to adapt. And actually, it's healthy for children to know that they may have to wait a minute for you. That's okay. That's not going to make them feel abandoned. Imagine a mum of twins or triplets, and one is here and one is there, and that one just needs to wait a second because I just need to do this here. And there are attachment parents of singletons who possibly couldn't get their head around that because they wouldn't be able to stand that one crying for even a second. But actually they're okay. And there is a difference. There's a big difference between a very brief wait and ignoring. There's a huge difference. I'd like to say that for the purpose of this message, I have highlighted some extremes because I need to, you know, make sure that you can see the different extremities. But, you know, it's important to see the different ways that people view these things, and why it's actually important to get the whole picture, understand all the different reasons and philosophies. And I think the bottom line is, sleep training doesn't have to be harsh and it doesn't have to be leaving babies to cry and get upset and it'd be, you know, grueling. Speak to any of the parents that I've helped and they'll tell you that, you know, we do things so gently and so gradually. Mostly it's about it being in tune with the parents and the child. If I had a magic solution and I could wave my wand in or give you give you a document that said, here you go, here's how we do it, I would do that. But that's not how it works. It's about, you know, I'm a detective and I will figure out that, like, okay, this is the situation with the parents, this is the child, this, you know, lots of exploration work in order to determine the most effective way for this to work and to stick and to be a long-term successful path. And as I always say, we don't push babies or children into doing anything that they aren't already capable of doing. It's just that perhaps that capability is buried underneath the surface and we just need to lift off some of the, you know, the confusion, the inconsistencies or the habits that we want to shift so that we can bring out the best of them and actually let them do what they can do and want to do. So that's a little overview for you of the different extremities of the different viewpoints on sleep training and how there are people who sit in the middle. You don't have to go for give up, there's no hope, I'll just put up with this till they're seven, or it's all gonna be harsh and, you know, upsetting and then it will be okay. You don't have to, that's not true, it's not either or. There really is a happy medium and it makes for happier, healthier family life.